this is kind of full circle. Like we were just talking about, I met Shab through the podcast and now we're sitting here.
Thanks for having me. And it's just funny how the musical webs all tying together somehow. You know what I mean? It's just like such a snowball effect.
It really is. And then finding out that you were from Long Island and then my mom's from Long Island.
Does she still live there or where does she live now?
No, so she's been here for about 30 years up in Seattle, but she was in Hop Hog most of her life. Or I guess.
Oh, that's kind of where I grew up. Well, that's where I was born, Hop Hog-ish.
Right on. So yeah, she was Port Jefferson Station until she was 12 and then moved Port to Hop Hog.
I was really born in like Port Jeff, I guess, technically. And then I only was there until I was like 8 or 9, but then we really lived in the Hop Hog-ish area. My family's still in Hop Hog. My aunt and my cousins are all still in Hop Hog up there. And it's so funny.
The downer was she said in Hop Hog, she didn't remember eating pizza a ton.
That's a sin.
Hey everyone, welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjean. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort. Without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music.
Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast is coming to us from Los Angeles, born in New York and raised in Charlotte, North Carolina. He kickstarted his musical journey at 15 on the bass. About a decade later, started honing his production chops in Logic Pro, opening a whole new world and drawing from alternative rock and pop punk to Billie Eilish. He's crafted incredible works across the musical spectrum, working with the likes of Brooke Day, King El Noir, and Atea. Recently, Ripe, a song that he produced for Flavia, was featured in Generations, the latest project from Lena Dunham, now on HBO Max, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. So, without further ado, please welcome the man that achieves balance as an avid runner and avid foodie, Joe Pepe.
Wow, what an intro, dude. It makes me feel important. Thank you.
You are.
I'm not, but that's very flattering. That got me hyped up for the day, you know, that intro.
Getting started early here so you can
go. Yeah, 10 a.m. Getting started early, dude.
All right. And I have to switch up one thing I said. It was a little unfair to my mother. She did say that in Hop Hog, she knew Carnival Pizza. And this is important because I'm taking a trip to the East Coast in a couple months. And I'm going to need your insights.
Oh, Carnival. That's a really famous one in Hop Hog, which I don't mean it's good, but there's better ones in Hop Hog, actually. Are you doing a tour over there? Or are you just visiting? What are you doing?
So I'm going to see like the Berkeley campus and whatnot, and then kind of just doing a trek down with my partner. She's just moved from DC, so we're actually going to go down the coast, and if we can book shows, like, sure, we'll do that. And then,
whoa, that's awesome. That's really cool. Awesome, awesome. DC is amazing too. She just moved to Seattle from DC, you said?
Yeah, so I guess it's technically been over a year, but funny enough, she just flew in back from D.C. last night. So,
oh, really? D.C. is great. I used to, you know, being in Charlotte, it was only 5 or 6 hours for me, and I had some really good friends up there. I used to go and visit them. And then when I was still playing in bands, every tour on the East Coast, we'd always hit D.C., and it was always like a blast because we get to stay with them, and they were such nice people, my friends. And then the city was just like so much fun. So, yeah, I've spent a lot of time in D.C.
What spots did you play over there?
I can't remember now. In one night, out the other night, you know, next morning.
Right, for sure.
I was like right by the, it wasn't the Black Cat. That would have been the cooler venue to play up there, but it wasn't the Black Cat. It was like right, like on the same block as the Black Cat. I just can't remember the name of it now. I remember it was like upstairs. It was like this room upstairs. It was like a decent size. It was fun. I just can't remember the name of it. I'm sorry.
I put you on the spot. I guess starting with the East Coast then, do you mind walking me through how music played into your life in the early years?
Yeah. I mean, my formidable years were spent on the East Coast for sure. Like I said, I was born in Long Island, only lived there till like 8 or 9, and then really grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. And then I moved out to Los Angeles almost 6 years ago now, 5 and a half. It'll be 6 years in October, so we'll call it 6. It was funny. I was like super into, when I was in elementary school, middle school, I was like super into baseball. I'm like, I'm going to be a professional player. Like, that's what I want to do. It's like, that's a, you know, we see athletes. And then I literally, on a summer break, I heard Blink-182, And I was like, oh, like the next day I was like, I don't care about baseball anymore. All I want to do is music. It just like clicked with me so much. It was like insane how fast like it unlocked something in me, you know? And then from there, you know, I was in high school, I guess. Played in a bunch of pop punk bands and not a bunch, actually just a couple of pop punk bands in high school. We did some Southeast touring even when I was younger, like when I was like 17, 16, oh, wow. 17, when I was like, yeah, I started young. Yeah, nice. I started like really young doing that, which I don't know why my parents let me do it, but they did. They just are so passionate about it, I guess.
Or they're get him out of the house.
Right, yeah. No, they were super worried about me because it's like, it wasn't like very far, but you know, it was like, you know, a long weekend or two, you know what I mean? Every few months, you know what I mean? With a band and like, you're 17 years old, like just, yeah. It was me. It helped because I would always play in bands with my twin brother, who's also a producer out here in Los Angeles now. But, you know, so it helped, like, it was just like me, my brother, and like a drummer. It was like a trio, you know what I mean? So it was right. Like, they were worried, but at least we had each other. So, I did that. Eventually I ended up playing in a band again with my brother that did quite well. I mean, in the standards of bands back then, you know, Billboard put us up as like the number two unsigned band in the country in their magazine. They put us on tour with Chevy. We did like a full national tour with them, all paid for. It was tight. Anyway, so that was like great. I thought, I'm like, we had a bunch of like label deals on the table. We had a bunch, but we had a few, like, and I thought, oh, this is gonna happen. And then, as bands do, you know, they fall apart when things get crazy, you know, when you're young and you don't know what you're doing, you know, like lead singer got a big ego, the whole thing fell apart. And I was well, my life is over. Like, you know, I felt like when I was like, you know, I was in my early 20s, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, now what do I do, you know? And then at the time I was working at a studio, Studio B Mastering in North Carolina. My friend Dave Harris, who still masters most of the things I do, hired me as an intern and then as assistant. And that's when I got started really getting into, like production, like, you know, cause I was in the mastering studio every day with him. And what's unique about mastering is that he works on so many different projects in a week, right? You know, like you master an EP a day, you know, whatever it is. It wasn't like I was used to him. Like, oh, I'd go in the studio with my band and we'd be there for 2 weeks and that's the only thing we'd be working on. Right. Yeah. You know? So I got exposed to a lot of different production styles and different types of music really fast working for him, which was really cool. So I think it definitely honed my ear as a producer without me knowing it, you know, because since that band did well in our local area, a lot of other artists or bands would ask me and my brother at the time, like, oh, like who recorded you guys' stuff? And it was me, my brother, and like another guy that we knew. And it was mostly Mike and I, right? So we're like, oh, I mean, like me and Mike did. And they're like, oh, cool. Can you do a song for us? Like, okay, sure. Like, and at the time I was like, oh, guess what a producer does, right? I never really thought of it like that, but you know, so that's kind of how I got my start doing it. And then, lo and behold, a random Instagram DM that I sent to Steve Rennie, who's Incubus's manager, or was Incubus's manager, I started doing some work for him, actually, out in LA, just digitally with him. He would send me things, and one day my phone rang, and it was Steve, and he said, hey, is this Peppy? He always calls me Peppy. I'm like, yeah. He said, hey, this is Steve fucking Rennie. I'm like, oh, hey, what's up, man? Like, I never talked to him. He would only go over email, or his assistant would email me to do stuff for them, right? He was like, you're doing a great job, like, and so he basically, like, quizzed me for, like, 20 minutes on the music business and music industry and to see how much I knew, I guess. And I guess I passed his test because at the end of this conversation, he was like, I'm going to buy you a plane ticket. Will you come out here for a week and hang out with me and work in the offices? Like just see how it's done. I'm like, sure. So the next morning I woke up, there was a plane ticket in my email, you know? Wow. So I flew out to Los Angeles. He put me up for a week. And again, this wasn't creative. He knew I was a producer. That's actually, you know, how we met a little bit but this was purely like helping him with things on the business side of stuff. I don't know why he chose me off the DMs, but he did. He must have liked me for some reason. And he's still a very dear friend of me, just with, not skipping too far ahead, but me and Steve are very, very close still. Like, he's an amazing, he did so much for me to help me get on my feet here. So I went back home after a week and I was like, I did more in a week there than I did in like 2 months in North Carolina. You know, like I was making a living in North Carolina. I was playing in bands. I was working in the studio. I was producing. But I hit my glass ceiling really fast in a small city like that. You know what I mean? You just hit it fast. So lo and behold, he flew me out again maybe 6 months later. And he told me at the end of the trip, like, hey, listen, I know you're creative. You know, I know you're a producer. But I really like you. If you come out here, I'll give you a job at the offices. And wow. you can still be a producer, do sessions. You can pretty much make your own schedules, make sure you get your shit done, you know? Yeah. But I'll give you an opportunity to kind of move out here with a little bit of money in your pocket, you know? So I said, hey, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. So 6 months later, I packed all my shit up and I came to Los Angeles.
Wow.
And yeah.
That is wild. If you don't mind me asking, what kind of work did he have you doing?
He was obviously managing Incubus. I was actually working with that stuff, but mostly on the – he was actually doing a mentorship program for a lot of music industry people. He had like a bunch of managers with him and things like that. And it was like a lot of lessons and – like academic things of like from like real world business perspective. And he had obviously like Brandon Boyd there and people that were really doing it, you know, like really doing it at the highest level, kind of mentoring certain industry professionals that were just getting started, or like artists that were just getting started, or like maybe mid-grade artists, you know what I mean, that had a label deal but wasn't really sure what to do next, you know. So I was hoping to like a lot of that stuff, to be honest with you. So yeah, it was fun. It was really fun. I learned a lot, and I met more people than you can imagine coming through his office. Because, you know, he's Steve, even before he managed Incubus, he was the vice president of A&R at a label. You know, so he already knew a bunch of people, and then he ended up managing Incubus. So just every day we'd have another person that did legendary shit come through, and I got to hang out with them and just learn a lot. You know, even producers, artists, A&R guys, managers, whoever, you know, it was like a plethora of information I was able to kind of get from that experience. So then, I'm sorry, I feel like I'm going on and on about my story.
No,
here,
this
but
is
it's just, it's just a crazy. I have just a crazy story, you know? And so one day he comes in and he says, Pepe, I got good news and bad news. I'm like, okay. Good news is I'm retiring. Bad news is you don't have a job anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
So, but I mean, you know, in typical Steve fashion, he took care of me for like 3 months. He gave me like severance pay, quote unquote, so I could like get back on my feet. Yeah. You know, lo and behold, though, one of those contacts I met through him knew somebody else that was looking for somebody to manage their studio. Basically, it was a publishing company, Angry Mom Music, and they needed somebody to manage the studio, kind of book sessions, get people through the studio, just do clinical work, clerical work. And I was like, all right, I mean, to be honest with you, I love the people there, but I don't really want to do it because it was like not as loose of a schedule as Steve let me take, because I was able to do sessions when I wanted and everything like that. And at that time, I was making good side cash doing sessions, you know, but not enough to maybe live on yet in LA. Mm-hmm. So I took that job, worked with Angry Mob for maybe about a year or so. But the cool part about that was I got the studio at night to do whatever I wanted with, because it was only during the day of the sessions. So lo and behold, I'd work with a lot of artists at night and things on. And then one day, the A&R guy there, Ralph, he was like, man, this stuff sounds dope. Like, maybe we'll sign you instead of having you book the studio. And that was my first publishing deal. And I'm still with them now. So that was my first publishing deal. And then I wasn't with them for a minute. I was just unsigned. And now I'm back with them for another little bit. So, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. So I have not heard that route of someone going the business side, working literally for said publisher, and then like switching over.
Yeah, it's rare. It's definitely rare. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, they hired me knowing, again, like I was never shy about that. I would be doing sessions and, you know, and things like that. It's like they knew it's not like I was like sneaking around. They knew I was doing sessions at night. You know what I mean? Right. I wasn't trying to do something behind somebody's back. They knew exactly what I was doing and they were totally cool with it. They were just a very forward thinking company. That's why I love them so much. They're very artist friendly, producer friendly, and they encourage creativity through the offices and through their personnel. And it just so happened that, you know, I'm a much better producer than I am at booking a studio, you know? So, and I think they saw that, you know? So,
yeah. Has that paid off, though, for you as well as having kind of that scheduling experience as a producer?
Yeah, it did for a while. I have a manager now, which is a huge help. Shout out my manager, Chandler. She's the best. But yeah, I always ran it. You know, it gave me a good sense of, dude, reply to your emails, reply to your text messages. If you can't, let them know you're going to get back to you. I've been always very on top of my stuff. I think because I came from a background of the mastering studio where I was doing sessions every day with, and was very organized. Then I went to Steve's place, which was super organized and very, obviously it's like the highest level of the music industry you're working at there. So everything's like, everybody has to be super on top of their stuff. To a publishing company, you know what I mean? That was like, again, like very cookie cutter, just like, It just was like everything had to be done at a certain time, otherwise it wasn't getting done. So I think, yeah, in my own career, I've brought that with me. I feel like just the professionalism of booking things and just getting back to people fast. I try, and I feel like, you know, that does, in some respect, it does set you apart, especially in this industry when people take days to get back to you or whatever. You know, if I'm hungry for it, I'm going to go for it. So.
And for those that maybe aren't familiar, haven't had actually a ton of opportunities to chat about what publishing is, do you mind just kind of walking folks through that and maybe how it you approach it differently as, say, a producer as opposed to, like, your band or something like that?
I mean, publishing is some of the most... First of all, publishing is usually the first paycheck you'd get as a producer or artist or something like that. More likely, I mean, everybody's different. Sometimes you sign a label deal and then you get publishing depending on if you want to build more value on the publishing side. But a lot of times, publishing is the first people to, like, believe in either producer or artist, I feel like. They're the first people to jump on board and say, hey, we like what you're doing. We feel like we can elevate this, right? So as a producer, you know, the publisher is responsible for a couple of things. I mean, my A&R guy, Ralph, is responsible for setting up some sessions for me to make sure I'm getting artists and cuts, you know, out so that they can make money in the back end, right? So they're collecting all the publishing money. They gave me an advance up front. And now whenever I get a song out or that gets synced, such as you had mentioned my sync on the Hulu show, the Lena Dunham show, I had a Netflix sync just a few weeks ago too. You know, they're collecting the publishing money on the back end of that. So that's how they make their money, right? So they're working out those sync deals. They're working out the fees. I have nothing to do with that. I just find out. They email me, like, hey, this song is getting synced for X amount of money. You know what I mean? Like, out of that, you're going to be getting this much. You still owe me this much in your advance. So, you know, I mean, it's going to us. But there is also, I get paid on the master side too. So if I get master, that's because they don't own the masters, obviously, you know? So that's one thing they do, setting up the sessions to build value there so they can get cuts out and make money. And the other thing is, like, going out and, like, collecting the money. You know, you don't realize how hard that is. And, like, registering songs so that you can collect the money. You don't realize how many nooks and crannies there are in the music industry until you try to collect the money and nobody wants to pay you. So right. They're responsible for going out. And also just the sheer amount of, when do I have time to do that? I'm in sessions 4 or 5 days a week. When am I going to have time to email this label or email this person or make or check my, you know, whatever, my independent artist that isn't signed, check with them, of, you know, like, I don't have the time of the day for all that. That's their jobs, right? You know, so right. They're going to collect the money because they want to, make sure they're getting recouped on the money they gave to me up front. So their responsibility is to go and find all of that money that's due to them. You know, even if it's a couple of $100 here or there, you know, it adds up. Like, overseas, that's a huge thing, right? I mean, they do all the accounting differently. So they'll go to Germany and say, oh, well, this song you did with Brooke Day was streamed a million times in Germany. Like, we need to collect on that. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not going to go in. I don't know how to email the publisher in Germany to do that. You know, so that's a really important thing that people overlook a lot of times. They'll go out and get that for you. And in the end, that can build more value as well because they're going out and finding more money for you, which in turn recoups them, but also builds how much value you have as a producer or artist. You know what I mean? Because you're finding more money in more places. So that's like the main job as a producer, I feel like, that they do for me, if that makes sense.
For sure. What is the most out there kind of sync you had? For context, I interviewed Mara Schwartz Kugi from Superior Music.
Yeah,
and she had like a sync, like literally in the squeaker of a stuffed bear was like one of her most wild syncs.
That's funny. Man, I haven't had anything like crazy like that. I was on a bunch of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, which was like kind of cool, I guess. One was with like Kanye in it, which I thought was like super dope. Just I've been like a huge Kanye fan. So I was like, oh, whoa, my song's like a scene with Kanye. That's dope. That's sick. Like yeah. He didn't know it, obviously, but it was just cool. I think one of the things were actually that paid a little bit better on the back end with my BMI statement, which was just really weird, was that I think like American Airlines picked up one of my songs as instrumental for like the background of one of their videos that they show.
Yeah.
It just showed up on the BMI thing. I was like, what is this? It's like American Airlines. And it was like, how many hundreds of thousands of times, you know? And I was like a few cents, but it ended up being like $500-$600. Like, what is that? You know? And American Airlines had like showed it. Like, it was like background music for one of their videos they show on some of their flights for a few months, which was weird, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is funny because you figure however many people are seeing that.
Yeah, exactly.
From performance side to what I wonder if they have to do that like once per plane ride or if it's literally every seat of the plane.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't even find it. It wasn't like, again, that was like a, obviously they're not paying a lot for that. So it's hard to tell, you know, because it's like, but it was like a 3 month thing. You know, I will say the people ask me about sync stuff a lot only because it looks like I have a, well, I've done well in it, but you know, I've never ever, and I swear on my life, I've never written for a pitch sync before. It's always just music that I do with my friends that is released and they end up being synced on a show. You know, I'm never given pitches of like, hey, this TV show is looking for this. And so I've never sat down and done that before. I've only just made the music with my friends and it, and I'm lucky because I have the publisher going out there and pitching these songs, obviously, you know, and they're saying, hey, I know this, you know, this song is has this lyric in it, or you're looking for, or this show's about this time era and this, like, maybe would work well with, you know, what you do music-wise for the show. But I've never done, like, a sync pitch before. I just feel like, for me, it's pointless. I just kind of just do whatever I want to do with artists, and I get cuts with them, and then somewhere it fits along the line, you know? So I'm always more concerned of, like, is this song going to come out? And how is it going to do on Spotify? Is it with a label? All that stuff is more important to me than ever. Like, and the sync stuff is always really cool when it happens, but I never just like, you can't rely on that, I feel like, you know, so.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. That's awesome that you're just like focusing on that. And I think, like you mentioned, another value add of the publisher is like, great, this song's finished and you've got people on your behalf.
Yeah, that is a big thing. So yeah, a lot of people ask me about the sync stuff. It's like, you know, there was a company Boone & Murray was working with before I got signed, who did a lot of those Kardashian shows, I was on the Real World, the Road Rule stuff, the E stuff. And we got some solid syncs through that, to be honest. I got some solid syncs through that because they produce all that content. And I got in really good with the head of music there. I don't remember how, it was a mutual contact I had when I moved out here and we just hit it off. Awesome. And so that was awesome. Yeah, I remember actually, it was like one of the first parties I ever went to in LA was like, a going away party for this girl that I knew that was working for them at the time. And then she introduced me to the head of music there. And he knew my friend Jillian, who manages Taking Back Sunday, who was also there. And Jillian was like, oh, you should meet Joe. Like, blah, blah, blah. I think he's worked with Caroline before and some stuff. He was like, oh, yeah, I've heard your name on The Office. Like, you know, some stuff you produced, we put on a couple of shows. And so that was really the only thing I ever did on my own with sync. And it was so easy because I knew them so well. I would just email them things that I thought were dope. Again, they would never send me sync briefs, though. I just thought, oh, this could, you know, whatever, this could work. I would just email them whenever I had a good list of things together. But, you know, once you get signed, they don't really want you doing that, obviously, for obvious reasons. You know what I mean? They don't want, like, the producer going out. So then they would just handle it. But it does help that, like, you have a couple, and it's like a three-person sync team over there, I think, listen to the music you send in and saying, oh, I'm working with this music supervisor for this show. I think this would really fit because they were more familiar with what they're looking for, right? You know, that's their job, is to know what shows are coming out in the fall, next spring, next winter, and knowing what the content is that they're looking for and like going out and giving your music to these people so that they're listening and like, oh, this should be great. And honestly, they send those briefs out, man, and half the time they end up picking a song that has nothing to do with that brief. The sync people don't know what they want until they hear it, you know? And it's no slight to sync people at all. Like, I don't know what I want until I hear it in a session. Like, oh, I hit upon something. That's what I want to do today, you know? So it's no slight to them. It's just like, you don't know until you know. And they just, so a lot of times, I talked to Roya at the Angry Mob, and she said, oh, I sent the song, and it had nothing to do with the brief, but they loved it, so they put it in the show, right? It's like, okay, it's had nothing to do with the brief, but it just happened to fit so perfectly. They didn't know it would, and that's just her having a good ear and being awesome at her job and just knowing, oh, I know this could actually fit, even though I don't think it would, and she just sent it, you know?
Right. Before Angry Mob, was that just like an admin kind of deal, that agency you mentioned that was producing stuff?
Yeah, they were doing it was just like, I forgot the name for it. It's just like when they don't own the song, right? They just sync it once and then you can still get it synced other places. It's just like a multiple sync deal or whatever. And they had me, it was just like a very simple thing. They would just pay me, you know, they would just pay me on the back end on publishing on it. So awesome. I would just show up my BMI checks. There was no upfront money with them, you know? Now with Angry Mob, there's upfront money for them because they have to recoup on their balance. So they're saying, oh, we need $5,000 for this sync. We need $2,000. What's your budget to sync this song? And then we'll get paid in the back end too, but they're working out their fees on the front end, you know?
Right. For those, again, that aren't familiar, that's super important to be registered in all these spots. Like you're mentioning BMI, like the PRO.
Yeah, I can't stress that enough. And also be registered as a, a songwriter, but also have a publishing entity as well, because then you can collect on, because there's this, remember, there's a songwriting part of publishing, and then there's a, and then there's the publishing entity of it, and you need to collect on both of those things. So if you're missing out of having a publishing entity, you're missing money. You get paid on both of those things. So it's really important to have both of them. I mean, it's like $200 to start your own publishing entity with BMI or ASCAP or something, but you know, if you're really getting, if you really want to go out there and do it, you're going to need it, and that $200 gets recouped really fast if you get, like, you know, just a couple of things.
Right. That's awesome. How does that work when, say, you've got a publishing deal as, say, a producer, and then you have, like, a project as well?
Gotcha. Like, I mean, you know, I don't really do the artist thing too much anymore at all, which is for fun. Sometimes I play in a band, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you have both, I mean, they can be mutually beneficial. I mean, I tell my friends all the times in bands, like my friend Kevin, he's a great guitarist, and he's a session guitarist for me a lot. I'm like, and he plays in a band out here, the 27s, who I produce a lot for. I'm like, dude, you know, you can go out and get a publishing deal just for you, and then your band can go out and just get a publishing deal too. Like, they're separate. I mean, given when you sign as just Kevin, you can't sign the 27 songs then. Right. The 27s would have to sign a deal, and that would be, so you have to make sure it's carved out differently. But like, you can go and get two different publishing deals. If you have value as both of those things, you can go and do that for sure. You know, if it's not, it's just solo project. If it's a solo project, you can't really, if it's just, you know, if you're just Zed, you know, you have one, you know, you're just Zed, right? But if you have a band of two or three people, let's say, well, you can go get a publishing deal for them and you, and then you can go as a songwriter for yourself and get a publishing deal too. So I'm not sure if that answers the question or not, but I mean, that's kind of...
No, totally. Just validating with you kind of your experience in that, but it's super important to have those separate, because I'm in like a policy class at the moment.
Oh, cool.
And we were talking through a lot of like the importance of differentiating the two because of various reasons. Yeah, I was just curious, like what the real world experience...
Oh yeah, I mean, I would encourage that, because honestly, you can just flat out, I mean, you can just make more money that way. You can get two different advances if you want, you know. So if you're a songwriter and you play in a band, or have a like a duo or a group or something, like go and get something different for them. I would encourage to have them separate because of what I'm saying. You can try to get two different advances for those things.
Do you mind walking me through it? This is gonna sound like just nebulous, but like through your day to day, like we've kind of talked through a bunch of what it's like to, you know, work with a publisher and whatnot. And then, so I guess day one or even year one after signing, what does that look like for you?
I'm gonna walk you through my day to day or my week to week, you know. Typically, I wake up at like 7 a.m., go for a run or exercise, right, to keep my head straight mentally. That's really important, you know, before I start diving into things. Come home, eat some breakfast, hang out with my wife and my baby for an hour or two. And then I'll usually sit down and around 9:30-ish, you know, I try to get started around 9:30-ish, 9:45. And usually I'm either finishing up whatever the previous day was or catching up on things I need to get caught up on, you know. Or I'm replying to emails, like, or talking to my manager about booking sessions or what. Like, usually my 9:30 to like noon is just spent on like sending stems out, sending prints out, replying to emails, getting things in order for other sessions, like talking to my manager, making sure everything's in order before I get in my session, because usually my sessions start around noon. And then once I'm in session, you know, like, I'm in session, you know. I'll reply to some things every once in a while if I get a break, but, you know, mostly all of my, but the next 7 or 8 hours, my attention's fully focused on that to 7 or 8 o'clock at night. So, you know, if things come up during the day, my manager will text me or email me so I can reply to them as they come. But then I'll just be in session. Now, like yesterday, I had a nice chill day in the sense that I didn't have a session, so I got to catch up on things from like that I've been needing to do for like a couple weeks, which was nice. So yesterday was like kind of a day where I got like a lot of stuff in order for the next few weeks, you know, and got like a bunch of phone calls and emails and stuff out of the way. But normally, yeah, I have sessions, I'd say 4 days a week, sometimes five. I try to keep it at four. Four's like, five can be a little bit draining after, you know, doing five songs a week is a little draining sometimes. So, but yeah, I mean, that's really my day to day. I mean, it's not too exciting in the sense that, you know, in that sense, I'm just lucky I get to wake up and produce music every day with people. So, I try to do a lot of artist sessions mostly. I just, you know, I enjoy work with artists directly. You know, I don't do a lot of pitch sessions. I do when the team is right and the opportunity is right, for sure. But I try to work directly with artists because that's the best way to get music to the label, to the manager, to people's hands, is when the artist is in the room and excited about what you did with them that day. So,
right. If I heard you correctly there, like a five song a week output, is that kind of something that you work towards?
Yeah, five's a lot. And like I said, I mean, if I'm doing, you know, I try to keep it to four sessions a week for sure. Three or four. I mean, it's so that I have a day or two to catch up on stuff because, you know, inevitably I try to finish the song in a day with the artist or the bulk of it until they come back and say, hey, I want to use this for the album or I want to release this. Let's go in back and tweak some stuff. Like, of course, you know, but I try to get, you know, 90%, 85 to 90% of the song done that day with them. Right. So, so, but inevitably some of it's going to spill over. There's going to be, when I wake up the next day, I'm going to have ideas when I sleep on it. It's just inevitable. Right. So then I'll tweak things, you know, so I like to have a day, maybe a week to try to catch up on some of that stuff and then sending out new versions of things. You know,
you mentioned those sessions. Is that like all different folks, or are you doing like, okay, if I'm going to work with this artist, I'm going to do 3-4 sessions with said person?
No, sometimes I do that. I wish I did more of that. Actually, I would like to do like 3 or 4 days more straight. It's mostly every day is different people. And it's usually, you know, of course, I have a large network of people that I work with. So a lot of times it is me working with my friends. But like today, it's like, in a couple hours here, I have my really good friend Kevin and Tima, and then we're working with an artist today that who I've never met, but I know Tima and Kevin, so it's like really good friends of mine with an artist that I'm really actually excited to work with. So, so it's like a four person session today. You know, it's usually between 3 and 4 people a day. Sometimes it's just me and the artist, like me and my friend King Elnoir, who you mentioned at the beginning. It's usually just her and I, you know, because she does it's more hip hop driven stuff. So, just, you know, I'm doing the beats and I'm doing the music and she's doing the top lines and melodies and stuff. And then a day like today when I was like, oh, I don't play guitar, I need a guitar player. Kevin's going to come play guitar, do some melody stuff. Team is an amazing top liner. She's going to top line lyric with the artist and the artist will top line lyric with her. You know what I mean? So it just kind of split up like that. Yeah.
For those kind of workflows, I know you mentioned you've built a community and you mentioned working with a lot of friends and whatnot. I guess for someone who is planning to move to LA, what would your advice to them be to kind of facilitate that?
Yeah, I mean, I know it sounds like I do because I'm very lucky that I do get to work with a crazy amount of talented people and I consider them all my friends, but it took a long time to do that. They did not I've been here for 6 years, you know what I mean? So that's a long time. The first year I was here, I couldn't get a good session to save my life. I felt like it was just did not. And then lo and behold, it sounds easy or cliche, but you know, you work with one person who's great and they really love what you do, and they say, oh, you know who you should work with? My friend Sarah. Oh, you should work with my friend Jeff, you know. And then they tell Sarah, Jeff, yo, I work with this guy Joe, he's a really nice guy, like I really like the song we did, you should hit him up. Or they're like, oh, the next session I have this writer I've been wanting to work with, like we should bring her in. And then they automatically know, now you get two people in the room and then they both know a bunch of people, right? So it really is that snowball effect of you just have to kind of keep trying to find your people you really connect with. And from there, there are, you know, all the great people know all the other great people. It just, it is what it is. You know, LA is a small city it's a big city, but the music community, everybody knows everybody. It's a very small group of people around here. So, you know, it just takes that one session, that one meeting to kind of like lift things and snowball everything. And until then, it feels impossible. And then once you do that, it feels like, oh, all of a sudden someone just opened the door and like, oh, there's all these opportunities, I feel like. So, but yeah, it takes a long time, man. I'd say be patient, network, go to shows, hit people up, DMs, don't be creepy about it, be normal, be a cool guy or cool girl. Know that when you move to LA, just because you're in LA doesn't mean that you're entitled to the work. You know, a lot of people think, oh, I'm moving to LA. Okay, well, everybody's talented here, so you got to bring something else to the table, right? You know, the talent in Los Angeles, nowadays anywhere, but the talent should be a given, right? There's of course, people that are going to be more talented. There's going to be people that aren't, I don't want to say less talented, because being a nice human and a nice person is going to get you further. Because I've seen more talented people than me not get as far because people just don't like being around them, you know? Like, I pride myself in, like, I just like people. Like, I like hanging out with people, and I feel like I just like to have people around, and because of that, I get excited about making music together, and I feel like that's taken me further than anything. And then, of course, you have to deliver. If you're making shit music, you know, oh, he's a nice guy, I'll get lunch with him, we're not going to have a session with him, right? You know, so you have to deliver. But that being said, the talent is a given. The talent level you have to have is a given out in Los Angeles. So after that, it's really about your relationships and who you are as a person and the people you know.
For sure. And I love that you're highlighting all of that, because in so many ways, this is being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I think that for folks starting out, at least, I think that gets kind of lost when it's like, I want to make music. And there's, like we're talking about, there's this whole other ecosystem that drives things forward. And
there's a whole, I mean, I wish that making music was the only part of it, you know, but in some days it seems like the smallest part of what I do. Even though it's the most important thing, some days the phone calls, the meetings and the networking, is sometimes more important to get you in those sessions that you want to be in to make great music, you know, because you can make great music all day from your laptop, but if nobody knows you're making great music, it doesn't matter. So there, you have to have a network of people that you trust and that are getting those things out there.
Yeah, this is all super insightful. I'm really thankful again for your time. I have this segment that I'd like to pivot to before we wrap up, which is just a rapid fire. I'm going to give you an either or.
Oh, cool.
And you give me your preferences.
Oh, great. This is fun.
Yeah, so we'll start talking Echo Park Pizza, Slasher or Sano?
Neither.
What's the best one?
Angelina's in NoHo. Best pizza in LA.
Didn't have that one on there, so we'll keep it pushing.
There you go. Yeah.
You mentioned a love for Blink 182. If we're going the hits, are you All the Small Things or Adam's Song?
All the Small Things. Good one.
Yeah. Thank you. If you had the choice for a session, exclusively produce or like be part of the songwriting, what would you prefer?
Produce. Yeah.
And what's the bigger high for you, like a big sync or a big playlist ad?
Big playlist.
Right on. You had no hesitation, which is awesome. Sometimes I try to like get people stumped. You're just like, nah, I already know.
Right. Yeah, yeah, awesome. You got to know in your gut. You got to follow your gut, you know?
Yeah, you're like, I'm steadfast.
Yeah, yeah.
Ultimately, why do you work in music?
Oof. I mean, I'm constantly excited about it. Every day I wake up and I'm stoked to do what I get to do. It sounds super cliche, but I am. I mean, you know, people try their whole life sometimes to make music for a living, and I've been able to build the opportunity that I get to do that. And I don't know. I mean, I can be working here for 12 hours and it feels like an hour went by. You can ask my wife that. That's a fact, you know, for sure, because I'm in here all the time in the studio working. So I'm just, I just really love music, and you can't beat that emotion in the room when you're writing something with people and you just know that it feels really good, and you just, whatever happens to the business side after that happens, but that feeling you get, hopefully almost every day when you're writing great music with people, you can't beat that. If I was in it just for the money, I'd go be an accountant, because there's better money and more consistent money in it. So you really have to love it, because it's highs and lows every day constantly. So you really have to be in love with the process and the art form of making music to do it. And I really am. I really am excited about the next thing I'm going to do, or the next, even just the next playlist I'm going to find a great artist on. Or I'm really driven by the actual art form of how amazing music can make you feel.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And then flipping it, what do you hope people get from the experience of working with you in music?
Oh, man. I mean, I just hope that they feel comfortable enough to be themselves, to be honest with you. Like, my main goal when an artist walks in the studio is I want them to be able to be the truest form of what they hear in their head. So that's what I'm here. That's my job as a producer, is execute what they hear in their head. So I hope I just try to make a comfortable space for them to be able to be their true self and talk about things. You know, the first hour of the session, I'm being a therapist. I'm not touching a keyboard, right? I'm just getting in their head, and we're talking, we're listening to music. So what's going on in your life? What's wrong? What's great, you know? And like, I've never met this person before, and we were talking about really important things to each one of us and trying to find a common connection, and then a song comes out, right? So I feel like, you know, I just hope that when people work with me that they feel like, oh, when I work with Joe, I can be me. I can make the music I want to make. That's what I hope for.
Love it.
Yeah.
And then, if you were to sit down with your 15-year-old self picking up the bass for the first time, what would you say?
Follow your gut. Don't listen to the people that don't think you can do it, because you can, and they can't. That's why they're saying you can't. And don't get so caught up on the small things, because in the end, everything you do that you think is the thing probably isn't, you know? It's like, I thought that band at 22 or 23 years old was the thing, and it wasn't. I thought that the next thing that I did at 25 was the thing, and it wasn't. You know, it's such a, not to go on a tangent, but it's such a small step business that it feels like you want to take the next big step, and the next big step always comes with another 1,000 small steps. So I would just say, don't get too caught up in the small things and follow your gut. I got, you know, it took me a long time, I was just talking about this, to really not a long time, but, you know, you figure it out, like, to follow your gut. If your gut's telling you something's not right, either that be musically or business-wise, like, I don't know if this person really is the person I should be working with, or I don't know if the session I really want to do, or I don't know if this chord feels right. Your gut already knows, your brain just fighting it. So just follow your gut. It took me a long time to figure that out in music because, you know, you see people doing this, you see people doing that, people telling you to do that, people telling you to do this. You feel like, oh, I should do all these things. And in the end of the day, you just have to follow what you think is true to yourself. Otherwise, you get just lost in it so fast.
Oh, that was super insightful. And thank you for sharing your story. It was wonderful to virtually meet you.
Yeah, I know, right? Finally. I know we've talked over text and everything so much.
Yeah, this was long overdue. But yeah, I genuinely appreciate your time. I know this is kind of your ramp-up time right before the big session's coming up. So anything you want to plug on here before we say goodbye to folks?
Just thanks for listening. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's just @ Joey Pepe. I'm sure you'll link it in the description stuff. So that's, I don't have, anything to really plug so much as just the music I'm putting out with people that I'm really excited about. I have a bunch of releases coming out over the next into the fall time that I'm super proud of that I've produced this year. So hopefully you follow along and like the music I'm making.
Definitely. And I'll be sure to highlight those as well along the way. So thanks again so much for your time and just really genuinely appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Cheers. Huge shout out to Joe for being on Made for Music. As mentioned on the pod, we connected through Shab, who was episode 21 guest. So some 40 odd episodes ago, which is pretty incredible to think about. So I believe it's been 3 years or so that we've been going back and forth over the interweb. So beyond overdue to connect. Be sure to give him a follow @ Joey Pepe on Instagram and stay tuned for all the incredible work that he's got coming out. As always, if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. Genuinely appreciate that extra effort, and I will see y'all next time.